Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hey, Carlos. Good to see you. Thanks for having me today. Really excited to be here.
Thank you for joining the show. Let's jump into it. So how did you get started with all of these product data and startup things?
Yeah. How to get started. Going back a ways, why I say I'm an entrepreneur. So I actually learned how to code. My mother was a software engineer. I learned how to code when I was a young kid. In middle school, and then had a lot of success, won some science fairs, did all that kind of stuff. But my dad was a sales guy, and he, you know, made me have an appreciation for the business side of things, the people side of things. And I think that kind of interesting background, you know, as I became a physics major and electrical engineering degree and master's degree, and worked at IBM for a while, you know, I have really nerdy friends. But I also, and a lot of them had nerdy dads. That's like where they got their engineering backgrounds from. And I didn't have, I had like a sales dad, and my mom was the engineer. And so that's why I'm always a big proponent of like women in engineering. I think it gives definitely a big perspective. And that's what made me, I think, an entrepreneur. I like both the tech and the business side. And I came out after grad school and spent a summer doing startups. I always thought I wanted to be an entrepreneur. It's just, I wanted to invent things. That's since I was a little kid, I wanted to be an inventor. And when I came out here, I just really kind of met what I felt like were my people, people who cared about the business side of things, the products and the engineering and the nerdy side. And so that's kind of my background and what got me excited. And I think, you know, I started this data company, Chartio. And you know, my role often, like when I was a physics major, was helping the really technical, smart kids also talk to everybody else. And sometimes I think about data as the nerdiest kid there is. They're like, if you were gonna went up to a party and talk to a database, it would just like list you all these facts and be like really not understandable. And so I'm always thinking about how do I help that person, like, because they have a lot of interesting info, how do I help translate them so other people can understand them? Chartio is kind of the software version of that personification, that personal interaction that I would do a lot in school and growing up.
When did you start the company, and can you give us an idea of the size of it?
Yeah, I just passed the 10-year mark with Chartio. So it was just me for a couple of years. And then we didn't have, you know, it takes a while. Chartio's in the business intelligence space. It takes a while to build a minimum viable product there and really get that going and ramped up. And today we're 40 people. We have almost 1,000 customers. We do all the data for the New York Times, the Financial Times, and DoorDash, and Postmates, and Udemy, Udacity, just a whole bunch of really fantastic companies and customers that we're really, really happy to serve and run the data platforms for. We've been profitable for a long time. It's kind of a weird thing for a Silicon Valley company, but we're kind of a weird company, very product focused in an area and solving a hard mission. So.
I can relate to your story of coming from a technical background and trying to express myself in a better way in front of non-technical people. My dad wasn't a salesperson, so I think that's great that you were able to develop the appreciation for these people skills in general. I think they're extremely underrated. So actually, product management in a way sounds a lot like that, kind of that hybrid in between business and technology. And we all talk about data and being data-driven and access to data, but for the longest time, you had to be pretty technical in order to get data and interpret that data. So I think that having access to tools that can make it more visual and less technical democratize access to data and hence makes you focus on the stuff that really matters as a business person.
Yep, and that's the whole mission of Chartio. We call it join people on data because that's proper SQL syntax. And it's all about making it so. Look, Excel's been out for 38 years. Excel's an incredible product. Anybody can use it. But still, once data gets bigger than a spreadsheet, all of a sudden you have to learn SQL or really complex BI products. And we want to solve that. Where, like, you know, it's been so long that only 5% of a company or even 2% of a company can ask questions of the data. You know, if you think about what if only that percent of company could use Google, you know, you'd have a really uninformed company, and like the persons who can use Google would just be hounded all the time, and people would be so uninformed. But that's the reality today when it comes to data, and we want to really free that up and make it so really people marketing success, people who have the context of the business, should also be able to be the ones asking the questions of the data.
You know, in product or in startups, we always say that you have to fall in love with the problem and not with the solution. We're talking about data as a big challenge, but like, when did you feel that itch to the point where like you couldn't take it anymore and you had to build a company?
Yeah. So the original name of Chartio was SQL Charts. So I'd done a Y Combinator company before Chartio, and I spent about 30% of my time. It was in the social space. We were called Social Browse. We were trying to build like Facebook into your browser. And we thought that would be a thing for a while. And I spent 30% of my time digging through the data, making dashboards. All the other companies in my YC batch were doing the same thing. And we would compare our homemade dashboards, and they took 5 minutes to load because the queries are still running and they looked terrible. And it took so long to make a chart. It was terrible. So, and then I was living with two guys on the Facebook data team. And they were building the tools for Facebook. Like everyone around me was spending between 30 and 100% of their time, you know, frustratingly trying to go through their data. And so, you know, I first made a little app for friends called SQL Charts. And you just type SQL and get charts. And then I got really passionate though about like, you know, SQL is a bad way to explore data. It's like very powerful, but it's really slow. You can't like really iterate. You can't explore with SQL. And also SQL is just not going to be learned by business users. If it was, it would have been by now. The need's huge there. It's just text-based. It's intimidating. And so, that's where I got the empathy. I had the problem myself. I saw it all around me. Just like everyone I was talking to was really solving the same exact problem. And then there were a lot of enterprise companies like trying to solve this problem, but they were really bloated. They were really like, it was clear that the whole buyer and the user like was super different. And it was really locked down to a small percentage of the company. It was like really cumbersome, really expensive. And I interviewed almost 100 companies because I was actually trying to talk myself out of doing another startup. And instead I just got really concrete on what was needed. And most people who were having success were building it themselves. And so we focused on being really agile and really usable. And along the way, I just got really empowered with the mission of what if everybody could explore their data? How much more informed would they be? And that's something that I really feel could increase human intelligence. I think like Excel has increased human intelligence. Google has increased human intelligence. And a really big missing part, we have all this data we're collecting, but the number of people and the tool and the power we have to access and get insights from that is very low. That we're still in the stone ages with data tools, I think. So that's what I got just like really, really obsessed with. There's been ups and downs. It's been quite a journey, but I have just been in love with that problem. I just think it's so worth it. It's really hard. I have a 40-page document on all the problems that it takes to solve this problem and this mission. But it's just so worthwhile. I think it can have such a big impact that every time I feel like hand in the towel or I hit some obstacle, like I'm in love with that problem. And I think it's like still really relevant. And we're just really obsessed as a company with solving it.
And I think timing now is great for that, because product management is growing. There's a lot of appreciation in the market for people who have to do a little bit of everything. So what are some of the myths and misconceptions that you've seen for folks in product during the last years?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot I see from product people, a lot of people feel they have a knack for it. Like they understand people, they get it, and they're just naturally good at it. I think that's a really misserving thing. I think even if you are good at it or you've learned a lot or you're very seasoned, I think having the attitude that you don't know and that you want to test it, that you want to get a user test and put it in front of people. The instinct is, oh, so much faster if I just like design it, it looks great, and launch it. But if you can prototype it, if you put it in front of people, if you can really get the data on it too, to really prove that it's working, that's huge. We just did a whole, speaking of also where you said like falling in love with the problem, not the solution. We rewrote our data explorer in this past year. We just launched it and called it Visual SQL. And about a year and a half ago, we put out our regular one. We got rated, we've been rated for years, the most usable BI product. And we're kind of content with that. But then I went and user tested our interface, and only 1 out of 10 people who you hand it to could get it, could make queries. They were all getting stuck on really big things. And we tested our competitors too. And the good news was like, we were better than them, but like, it's still only 1 out of 10. That wasn't at all close to our mission. And so we wrote all these prototypes and tons of designs, and we had to iterate so much because our first instincts were just really, really wrong. And we totally rewrote that. And so I guess people think their instincts are great, in short, you need to have the opposite assumption and assume like you don't know, and really go prove it and test it.
So let's talk about metrics for that, because of course we are here super vanity metrics such as a number of users or revenue. I mean, that's not a vanity metric, but in general, very big numbers that are hard to break down. In your experience, what do you think are like some metrics or a good approach for product people to kind of not regret to not be tracking the right things?
Right. First, like track stuff, it's always important. A lot of times you're already tracking it in your database just by the fact that like every time a new user signs up, you have a new user row in your database table. So just having good hygiene there is important. It's also important to know like whether you're at a scale where metrics matter, and how much they matter. If you're not going to have, you know, tens of thousands of data points on something, you're not going to be able to really have certainty. It's still good to be able to watch it and know, but then you got to mix in that qualitative data as well. So it's kind of like, is data a leading role or a kind of a supporting role? It really depends on the scale. Once you're at like huge scale, like Google, they do use like data as a leading component a lot more. But when you're a small startup, it has to be a little bit more qualitative.
So I also want to talk about your personal experience growing up as a CEO of a 40 people company for 10 years and starting previous companies before. That's such a journey. And I'm sure that you still want to build or participate in some of the product discussions. So what would you say is the overlap between a good product manager and a good CEO?
Yeah. There have been times where I've really tried to step away from product and really kind of give more autonomy there. And then times where I kind of come back to it and help. The best is when we find a really good balance and work on things together. So I think it's a lot about process, having a good process. Also having a lot of trust with the people. When I am in product meetings, you know, I like to reiterate, you know, I'm here as, you know, a co-product manager, not as the CEO. So, you really want to encourage feedback. You really want to make sure that it's not just, you know, what I say goes. I think even for like, you know, VPs of products or product managers, you know, they have to have the same thing. You're the boss, but you want to really encourage conversation all the way around and make sure that everything's really thought through. So I also really try to not, as much as possible. I have a natural tendency to jump to conclusions, get really excited about, let's try this, let's try that. But I try to encourage more, did we think about it the right way? Did we do our research? Did we consider, did we look at, you know, who does this the best in the market and how do they do it? And do we consider the persona coming in, the user, and have we user tested it? And so I'm more trying to facilitate the thought process than the actual like solutions and more facilitate that we get exposure to our customers and the users than actually come up with the exact solutions myself.
something that I've been seeing in the market now is that in order to decide what tool or what stack to bring in-house, this decision is almost shared across departments. It's not just the data team or the engineering team. Product has a big voice in it, obviously, executive team. And being more data-driven sounds great, but it's not easy. And it involves probably like a longer discussion. For companies out there who are reconsidering to improve their data stack, not just in the BI space, but in general, like how to properly go from tracking, storing, analyzing, visualizing, absolutely everything. What would be like some good practices to build a proper data stack?
Yeah, so first, we see overwhelmingly more and more of the people signing up are not data people. They're the business users, especially product people. That's one of our best fits. Product people really need the agility and the access and usually have enough technical skill to get a database connected. And then they want to dig through it. They have a lot of things they want to measure. And so we see Chartio land at companies all the time through product people. And then it really kind of expands through there. So that's definitely one of our big focuses. And setting up a data stack, you know, especially for product, there's often this decision and confusion around, do we need product analytics or business intelligence? And the pros of product analytics is, a lot of times it's like a more structured data set. It's kind of easier to explore and you get more like behavioral type data. And then the pros of BI is like you already have a lot of that data stored. The downsides of product analytics are, sometimes you have to go out and put another tracker on there. Oh, I wish I would have put that tracker on there 3 months ago. Or once you get that, 3 months go by and you see it and you're like, oh, well, now I need to see it by this. And then you've got to wait another 3 months. It can be a lot to do that iteration. A lot of times in BI, that data is already in your database. And so you can get either the exact answer or a close proxy metric to the one you're trying to do. So I really encourage people to actually start with BI. Obviously, I'm pretty biased, but a lot of times, the data that you're wanting to look at, the data that's really important is already in your database. And then we're coming out with a book with our data school. It's already published on datascool.com, but we're doing an upgraded version that's going to be published with Wiley soon about how to build an informed company and how to set up your whole data stack. And the stages people go through, and the stages people usually go through are starting with source data, just your raw sources all over the place. Then you move to the lake stage, where you're putting all your data into one spot, like a Redshift or a Snowflake or a BigQuery. And then a warehouse stage is the third stage where you kind of clean up that data. So it's less messy in the raw form. And then there's the MART stage where for the different departments, here's the product team, here's 30 tables you guys care about. For marketing, here's 20 tables you care about. So that it's a little bit more packaged and not too overwhelming for them. So setting up a lake and a BI tool is really quick to do and really powerful. And that's what I usually point people to do. Go get Redshift or Snowflake, ETL your data into that, and then start digging away with the BI product.
Now I want to take you a little bit away from the data world and talk about other things with you as from founder to founder. You know, like there's no only a book that teaches you how to do this. And we're constantly trying to learn and figure out a lot of things from the go. So I'm curious, in your case, what are the things that are top of mind for you to, and how do you block time to make sure that you are also learning so the company continues to grow?
Totally. That's hard. There's always so much. So I am really intentional. I have a weekend process of, my getting things done methodology. And then I really review, make sure I have the time and to be focusing on the right things. Right now, a lot of my focus is a lot of CEOs in the area are on diversity and inclusion. We're big supporters of the Black Lives Matter movement. We're not big supporters, but we're strong supporters. So how do we really build a great culture, an inclusive, diverse culture? That's a big part. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with product, but obviously top of mind for me. And so, I've got, asked a lot of people and got a great reading list and movie list and have been finding the time to really expose myself to that as much as possible. And then the other kind of related is building culture that builds a quality culture. You know, I've been friends with and really seen the early days at really amazing companies like Airbnb and Stripe and Pinterest and PagerDuty. And I've seen those early teams and the culture they have, and the bigger teams. And I know a lot of people at Apple, obviously, and the culture that they have for product and the obsession they have with quality is just so infectious. And it takes a lot to build and maintain a culture like that. And we're really working on that at Chartio. And so, you know, I study that a lot, and I study how to and consider and think about how to build and maintain that culture.
Some of the companies that you just mentioned are part of Y Combinator. So I guess you probably had the opportunity to interact with a lot of those founders at the very beginning. And one of the founders of YC, Paul Graham, actually said that you have to do things that don't scale. And I'm curious to see what are some of the things that you are personally doing that maybe don't scale, but they're so core to your values and to the culture of the business that you still want to invest time on.
Yeah. Big one, obviously, is like meeting with customers. And I have my sales team put me on 2 early sales calls every week. And you know, they have a kind of a quota of hitting that. And that's just great because I want to be really exposed to, you know, what problems people are having when they come in. And because it is kind of like all over the place, and how people think about it is all over the place. They've got data at so many different spots. And it is a little complicated on how to set up that stack. You know, we're writing this whole book to help solidify that and really explain it to people, because there's not much out there. It's really confusing on getting to the point where you then can put Chartio on, you know, on top of your data stack. And so I'm always interested in learning there. And the other is like user testing. It takes a lot of time. And I guess it's scalable, but we really try to expose everyone to customers as much as possible. Even every hire inside the company. And you'd think some people wouldn't need to be exposed, but boy, it's so much better when they are. Engineers, like maybe they just need to take tickets and get them solved, but boy, is it so much better when you make sure that they take the time to watch those user tests or go meet with the customers. And so it feels like a non-scalable thing, but I think it's actually quite the opposite. It's something that's necessary for scale.
So when you identify something that's big based on your research, talking with customers, you doing some usability testing, like how do you go about influencing the roadmap? Because at the same time, there are obviously product managers who are sharp, who are building this thing. And there's always this constant pressure of, oh my God, the CEO had this idea in the shower and now I have to throw everything away. So how do you keep balance?
Well, I can first say I've been pretty terrible at that in the past. And we are in a space that is really, especially in the early days of Chartio, finding like what are the core things that people have so many different uses and so use Chartio in so many different ways. And so to find that what's a core product, what are those things? Cause there's such a long tail of features. And if you ask our support team, like what's the most important thing we should work on right now? Like, I think it changes every week. And so it's really hard. But we have gotten now to a really good process. We call our problem definition document. And so anybody in the company can write, about a 2-pager, 1 to 2 pages on what a problem they're seeing. And then we discuss like, is this a big problem, you know, possible solutions, and then prioritize it. We have like an Airtable, you know, command board prioritizing all those things. So it has to be, you have to be really organized with that roadmap to see, to really prioritize, like, is this worth prioritizing or not? And in a product like ours, where we get so many requests, all over the place, you almost can't spend enough time on process and the organization and clarity of that roadmap. So we really, really emphasize focusing on that roadmap and the organization.
So now I want to talk about drinking your own champagne. Obviously, a lot of the companies that build a SaaS product, they also use it internally. And in your case, what are some of the good practices for your team that you think are also good for other teams just to get started? Let's say someone who, you know, they are not really tracking data much, they really want to have access and be able to ask questions in a non-technical way, how they can go from 0 to 1?
Yeah. You know, one, like a big one is data training. And so, you know, we make as intuitive a product as possible. We're always trying to make it more intuitive, but a lot of times the data underneath is like just confusing. Like, what column is that? And so there's two parts to that. One, doing some modeling so that the data is clean and organized, and named correctly, instead of having to tell everyone, oh, remember to filter out by like the is deleted, and remember that column actually means this. If you think about, I'm going to teach 100 people that, or just go fix it in the model. It's much easier to fix it in the model. So, but even when it's really clean, it still is really worthwhile to sit down for 20 minutes with a new person and show them what they can do and talk them through the data, what's available to them to dig through and find. And that's really kind of an empowering, enabling activity. I like to say Chartio is not like a, not quite like a video game where it's 100% self-serve. It's a complicated thing. And so it's more like a board game where if I gave you a new board game and said, I'm going to come back in 2 hours and play you, you're still probably going to not be too confident that you know the rules when you just read them. But if I sat and played it with you for the first 5 minutes and kind of explained, then you kind of get it quick. You often win your first game. You have a lot of fun. And so Chartio is a lot like that. We're like a board game where if you spend 20 minutes with somebody and just show them around, it makes a big difference.
Cool. Well, product obviously involves so many, wearing so many different hats. So I'm curious to know, what are some of the other tools that your team, your product team uses internally as part of their stack?
Yeah. Oh man, we are just like enormous Figma fans. We've been using Figma for years. It's so great, so collaborative, really enabled so many more people to work on it. One of our designers, Martin, is so great at just like organizing and componentizing everything in Figma. And then so other people can just like grab, you know, this drop down, and it's actually kind of works and stuff. Figma is just amazing. And we really look at them for a long time. We say Tableau, which is one of our bigger competitors, is the Photoshop of charting. It does anything and everything, but it's like, you gotta go to school for it. It's like really, really a lot there. And then people for the longest time would be, well, what are you? We didn't really have an answer. Now we're like, we're the Figma to their Photoshop. And so we're huge fans of Figma for a variety of reasons. Then we use a lot of user testing, usertesting.com. That's just been phenomenal. I mean, you can't deny when there's a problem when you put it in front of 10 people and then it also just empowers the whole org can watch that video and be like, oh yeah, we got to solve that. Like, they actually feel it. You don't have to spend 20 minutes explaining why it's important. Everybody just gets it. That's huge. What else we use Google Docs and Airtable for a lot of the organizing. And those honestly are like the biggest. Oh, and then obviously Chartio. We use a ton of Chartio to track our data, track how things are doing. See what users are doing inside the application. It's a huge, huge part.
But just to wrap things up, I want to talk to you about the future. Where do you think are the biggest opportunities for people building digital products today?
Yeah, I see a big trend happening. And I think like product managers are becoming like also data analysts. The tools for them to do things are becoming faster. Data is becoming more on their fingertips. And I think that's just a huge, huge part that you can see the results. You know, when we're building products, especially, you know, old products, like you'd start a restaurant and serve meals to people. You'd be exposed. You'd be in your restaurant. You'd know if people are happy or not. And now it's almost like we got restaurant chains, and you got to look at your Yelp score, and you got to look at like all the reviews and stuff. And so that's where we're at. And for you to see if people are liking it, you have to be able to dig through that data. That's a lot of your knowledge. And then of course user testing, but then at scale, the data. And so I see product managers becoming more and more data analysts, and hopefully products like Chartio make that even easier. So you don't have to learn near as much and spend near as much time to have that same power. But that's going to be a continued trend.
No, it's funny. When I started product school, 6 years ago, most of our students were software engineers. They already got the coding or the data piece, and they just wanted to be more business oriented. And mm-hmm. now I completely agree with you. I see so many incredible business folks, design folks, and like marketers, customer support, that they want to go into the middle and have access to the big picture as PMs, and being able to use visual tools, like you said, Figma or Chario or user testing, like just in general, being able to have power without having to ask for much help to other teams makes mm-hmm. you a very dangerous weapon.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.